composing the mind, body, the one point that includes everything. A sense of openness, vulnerability, trust. And even if you feel shut in, frightened, confused, trust in being aware of it. It's like this. The relationship even to tension, fear, confusion, doubt is one of embracing rather than of attaching and just becoming identified with it or trying to get rid of it, trying to exclude it. So if you're doing the one point that divides, then you're trying to concentrate your mind in order to get rid of unpleasant thoughts or sleepiness or doubt, resentment, restlessness, and trying to get rid of it through separating yourself from it, through cutting it out of your consciousness, rejecting it, or including it in the point that includes sleepiness, restlessness, worry, anxiety, doubt, anger, greed. If that's what's present, then it belongs here. It's included. Your relationship is one of what Krishnamurti called choiceless awareness. And in regards to metta, or loving kindness, practicing metta is what we're doing. Is that the point that includes is really what metta is about. Metta includes everything. It has no exclusiveness at all. Doesn't reject anything. So in loving kindness, the developing loving kindness, you're not choosing just the good friend, your friends and your people you like and everything and spreading metta, but its whole aim is towards all sentient beings, everything. Good, bad, the Lord of Death, the demons, the angels, friends, enemies. Because metta, it's not saying who deserves more metta. We're not being the judge. We're not playing the role of the judging righteous retribution, nemesis. We're not putting ourselves in these roles of who deserves the reward and who deserves to be punished, but metta is loving kindness generated towards all things, all beings, all forces. So that can also be seen as the point that includes, because that when we include, then it's like using this welcoming, the kind of metta. Rather than, oh no, here comes that nasty feeling again, or, oh my God, here this kind of fear is rising, and oh, how can I get rid of it? It's more an attitude of welcome, fear, nasty feeling, sleepiness. These are just ways of tuning in more to this intuitive sense that includes rather than the divisive attitudes of I want the good, I don't want the bad, I want happiness, and I want to get rid of suffering. So metta, translated as loving kindness, when we contemplate what love is, this is a word that we use a lot and means almost, you know, has all different kinds of meanings. And so, you know, it's a overworked word, but it does have quite strong emotional impact, you know, whether we, you know, want to or not. This is a pretty powerful word in the English language. So then we can think we understand love is like we often connect it to liking something. When we say we love something or somebody, means we generally like them. So we can say, I love pizza. What we're saying is, I like to eat pizza, isn't it? It's not having metta for pizza. So liking and as an opposite, doesn't it? I like and I don't like. So, you know, sometimes maybe I like pizza, sometimes maybe I don't like pizza. And, you know, the mood can change. We're in a pizza mood or not in a pizza mood. Or if the pizza's not very good, then I don't like it. Now, taking the word love in terms of unconditioned love, like in Christianity they call it Christian love or unconditioned love, or in Buddhism metta, it's not a matter of liking or disliking. It includes, isn't it? Love then is the force that unites, includes. So, in terms of loving your enemy, I remember feeling bewildered by that as a child. You're supposed to love your enemy. I thought, how can you love your enemy? You know, if they want to kill you and harm you, how can you love them? Because still the mind was equating love with liking. So somebody that wants to kill me, I can't, you know, feel very much liking for them. But does that preclude love? And so then, now we're getting to recognize that, say, love in terms of what underlies, what includes. It's this intuitive awareness, non-critical, but discerning awareness. It's what holds things together, isn't it? Love is a uniting force. It brings unity where hatred brings division. So what is it in this moment that brings unity to everything? And what unites and what holds everything together in this one point? Practically speaking, is what? Mindfulness, isn't it? The more we trust in this awareness and pure presence, then there's love also, isn't it? It's not the kind of romantic feeling that we identify with that. A kind of romantic love, but it's a natural love. It's a unconditioned love. It's metta. So the point that includes then includes this being here, this Ajahn Sumedho being, this body, this whatever is happening, you know, whether I'm happy, sad, elated, depressed, includes. The love is uniting. It isn't dividing, saying you shouldn't feel depressed. You shouldn't be angry with people. But it includes even the shouldn't. The judges, the inner tyrants. There's nothing that doesn't belong in this, that in this point that includes unconditioned love, unity, oneness. So that's an intuitive moment. And then we divide it by thinking, I don't want this feeling of resentment. I want to have loving kindness towards everybody. And I remember, like when we go through the list of spreading loving kindness, I remember one woman on a retreat, whenever her mother was mentioned, she said, may my mother be well and happy, and she just feel angry. She hated her mother. So then she started feeling guilty about this. Because she's so angry and resentful towards her mother, and she felt, I should love my mother, you know, with loving kindness, metta practice. You know, a decent person loves their mom. I mean, all she's done for me, gave me life, so forth, sacrifice. I should love her. And so then the guilt arises because the ideal of that you should like your mother at all times, no matter what she's done to you, or this sense of love is an ideal. Or the unconditioned reality of even welcoming and accepting the anger and resentment and the guilt that you might feel when you can't live up to the high standards or ideals that you hold. So you can see with metta then, and loving kindness and unconditioned love, it's another way of, another a kind of emphasis on this one point that includes on intuitive awareness, on sati-sampajanya. So when metta becomes idealistic, then it doesn't work so well. You know, where I should feel love for all sentient beings, it's easier to feel, you know, a sense of love for all the human beings you don't know, that have never hurt you, you've never had to relate to them very much, all the masses of humanity that you haven't met yet. It's easy to say, may they all be well and happy, and that there's no problem. But then for somebody that you live with, who you're fed up with, angry with, it's more difficult to, may you be well and happy, isn't it, than the masses of humanity you've never met, have never hurt you. So in this unconditioned love, remember, it includes being hurt and the anger, resentment. It means it's like this, it's a non-aversion, non-critical acceptance and openness to the way it is, rather than the way it should be, always coming from the ideal of how you should be or the world should be. Now, the ideal is that ideals are perfect. You can make perfect ideals, you know, they're the best. Can you get better than the best? Bestest. Or the supreme best. That is getting ridiculous, isn't it? Because it, you know, you keep wanting to go higher and higher. But this is, but ideals can be, you know, you think of the best, the most perfect thing, the unconditioned love as an ideal. That's the best. But as a reality, what is it? Right now, for each one of us here, unconditional love as an ideal and as a reality, what is it? What is the reality of it at this moment? So the ideal is like a guiding star. I'm not putting down ideals as, you know, not trying to disparage idealism, but noting its function, how to use ideas and ideals. You know, like guiding stars, you keep a direction, isn't it? And you have, you know, if you're out at sea and you need a direction, you go by the stars. But you also have to be with the immediate problems that are present, you know, the imperfections, the confusions, the obstructions, the difficulties that exist on the right, that exist in the body and in the planetary conditions that are present. So we can't just keep our eyes on the guiding star, and that we have to come to grips with the reality of that which is happening right now, which is not ideal. It's like this. But we have the ideal as a direction, as a guide, rather than as a position we take on every issue and then start complaining because life has so many problems, difficulties, imperfections, and isn't what it should be according to if it were ideal, then it wouldn't be like this. So this is just reflecting on the way it is, how to use the ideal as a guide, but, and at the same time to be able to come to terms with the realities, the obstructions, the imperfections, the diseases, the pain, the unfairness, the stupidity, the chaos, confusion, and all the difficulties of the world. So then in terms of the reality of unconditioned love, this is how I see it anyway, is this point that includes that's to me the practical application, this intuitive ability, intuitive awareness, satipaññā, satipaññā, which then includes even my aversion to a conditioned present or a fear, or includes all the people I don't like, includes all the shoulds and shouldn'ts, includes the inner tyrants, the demons, as well as all the good friends that we love and like and treasure, as well as the enemies. So that's an act of trust again, and back into sadhā or faith or trust. Trusting in this awareness that includes everything. So starting from what's going on right now for each one of you, you know, whatever you're feeling or experiencing, pleasurable, painful, confused, clear, bright, dark, good, bad, relating to this is with loving kindness, which means not dwelling in aversion, not resisting, not resenting, or if resistance is there, including resistance and resentment. It includes everything. So it includes the object, the person, the other person, and your feeling about that other person, and your idealism about how you should or would like to be. It is then an intuitive moment that includes, rather than an ideal which you can't live up to at this moment because you've got too much resentment. But it includes the resentment and the ideal at the same moment. About liking, isn't it? Like, it's interesting to talk to mothers of small children when the children are acting really horrible. And the ideal mother should love her children under all conditions. Does that mean liking them all the time? So when a child is acting in a horrible way, you can't like him very much at that moment, because the conditions for like are not there. But love is still there, isn't it? Unconditional love is not destroyed by the bad behavior of anybody. But liking depends on conditions being likable. So it's even liking yourself, if you're being really mean-hearted and petty and nasty, you can't like yourself very much because the conditions are not likable. You know, it's not, we don't like those kind of conditions in ourselves or in others. But metta is still, you know, the underlying unicity. I think some mental states that I had that I found really difficult to accept. You know, I could see certain mental states, incredible resistance to them. That as soon as this kind of comes into consciousness, a kind of almost immediate automatic resistance, not wanting to feel like this or this mood. And of course metta is a skillful means to deal with this the way we want, you know, there's certain things we want in as experience, and other things we reject and we don't want. We have maybe a lifetime of resistance or rejecting certain mental states. So beginning to awaken, just noticing this resistance and version of wanting to, you know, being, you know, wanting to resist, say, negative or even stupidity. And if you think of yourself as an intelligent, reasonable person, then mental states that are seemingly stupid or dull or nonsensical or irrational can be resisted. I can't bother with this rubbish, this stupidity. I have more important things to do with my life. And so there's this kind of personal arrogance that I can only deal with very, you know, useful, intelligent, reasonable situations, but this rubbish, this nonsense, this foolishness, I have no time for. You can be really self-righteous, you know, and full of a sense of our self-importance, because I'm the kind of person that is only going to deal with what is sensible and reasonable, and, you know, this is how I want to spend my life with on this side, with the stupid and the dull and the irrational and the crazy and the nonsense. I have no time for it. But metta includes all of those. So, you know, and not just stupidity from outside, but we, you know, I'm certainly quite capable of feeling pretty stupid. And having crazy, irrational, even maniacal feelings and thoughts. Frightening, you know, and frighten yourself with the maniacal thoughts, feelings about things. Don't want that. And how soon as anything on that level, demonic, or is just, oh God, I've got to get rid of that. Or does that belong also, you know, the dark forces, the stupid, the dull, the nonsense, the irrational. So the relationship of metta isn't, you know, rejecting that either, it isn't kind of excluding. But the point that includes, if those conditions are present, then they belong in this moment. So your relationship is one of metta, or welcoming, or allowing something to be what it is without, you know, that part of you that judges and divides everything up and wants to play this role of, I allow you, but I don't want you. You're okay, but you're not. I approve of you, but I totally disapprove of you, and on like this. We, the internal judge, the critic, is then also included in this. So this sense of this universality of being the universe, being one, being deathless, being amata dhamma, rather than all these death-bound conditions that we generally create ourselves with. You know, I'm the body, I am this person, I am my emotion, I am my memories, I am this kind of person. So metta isn't sentimentality, isn't it? We're not just trying to be nice and feel love, loving-kindness for everything. As a sentiment, as a kind of ideal that we have of loving all beings. Because then how do we, when we don't love anybody, when we hate all beings, then we feel guilty, don't we? If we can't love our mother according to the ideal, then we feel guilty, you know. I must be a pretty awful person, pretty horrible, because I feel so much anger and resentment towards my mother, which is just not a particular problem for me, but it's an example. My father, you know, that old bastard. I think I found this great relief, actually, knowing that Because I used to be incredibly idealistic, so I know the suffering of this. I think in America generally is a very idealistic society. You know, so it's in the culture, this very high-minded ideas. And so we're, you know, those of us who were born and grew up in this country, we have this is, you know, we have this as a kind of cultural conditioning. Very idealistic, you know, just so freedom and equality and, you know, the ideal of democracy where everybody, you know, there's no idea of no class preferences where, you know, whether you're poor or rich or whatever, we're all equal. It's a very high-minded. That's a perfect ideal, isn't it? Or even communism is very idealistic. You know, whether I was brought up to hate the communists, feel them as, you know, they're demons, but actually communist philosophy is very idealistic. So, these ideals are beautiful. I mean, there's no question of the beauty of these perfect ideas. They're beautiful, but also they're limited to that, that their ideas are not, they're high. And we have to deal with just survival oftentimes, getting food, making a living, just getting through life in some way, in some survival tactics. Just some people have to live on the edge all the time of just trying to get a meal, one for themselves for the day, or trying to get enough food to feed your children just for one day at a time. And some people in poverty-stricken areas, that's all they have time for. Survival, not for the ideal, but for just, you know, surviving till the next day. Ideals inspire us, don't they? Like, because they're high and beautiful and perfect, and just by talking in superlatives, how everything should be, about how we should all love each other and care for each other and support each other, only we can get very, very inspired. We talk about using superlative language. It's very uplifting. It lifts us out of that kind of dreariness of worry and anxiety and fear. So, you know, we can easily get inspired by idealistic ways of thinking or speaking. So if we depend on inspiration, then we have to keep kind of always kind of, we've got to find something that inspires us all the time. It's like, you know, inspiration is like eating sugar, you know, it gives you energy, but you can't live on it. And too much sugar, you know, you get sick if you eat too much. If you depend on inspiration all the time, you get sick of it, you become a cynic. Not another one of those inspiring talks. Don't tell me I should love everybody again. So the sati sampajanya is not inspiring, and it's not an inspiration, but it's reality. It's awakened attention. Includes inspiration. Inspiration belongs, if that's what's present, then that belong, that the ideals belong, everything belongs, the evil forces, the good forces, depression, cynicism, resentment, and as well as sentimentality and idealism. So what is happening right now for you? Start from where you are. What is it? Just notice, whatever it is, it's just say it. It's like this. Is it emotionally or physically? The sense of total acceptance of just it's like this, this feeling, this mood, the way it is, or the suchness. So in Pali you have these words like tathagata and dattada. This dattada is the way it is, the as-isness, the It's not trying to describe it in terms of definition. It is trying to get an accurate definition of the way it is, but it's using your intuition to know that it's like this. The feeling now is like this. That brings my attention. They right now in my abdomen, it's like this. So that brings my attention to that part of my body, and just I can't describe the words don't come to say exactly what it is, but it's this way, and it's a knowing in a very direct way, without having to perceive it as through language, define it in any way, but knowing it directly, it's like this, the way it is. Tathagata, the Buddha, after his enlightenment, referred to himself as Tathagata, which is that which is present now. It's not like Gautama Buddha with a past, you know. I was born to King Suddhodana. My mother died when I was born, so I was raised by my aunt. Brought up in the palace, had different palaces for every season. Very fortunate child. Was good at everything. According to my history, I was a great champion archer, and everything I did, I tended to do better than everybody else. That's me, Buddha. But this Tathagata is that which is present right now, this awareness now, which is not personal, doesn't have a surname, or it's not a clan, not a class. Not a man or woman, not a American or any other, not an Asian, European or anything like that. It's pure presence, it's universal, but it's that which is knowing right now. So translated as the way it is, or the suchness, or as-isness. So in practice, then, say, cultivating, when we talk about pavana, or the Fourth Noble Truth, the insight is to cultivate or develop, and the Pali word is pavana. So this is, and in Thailand, it's a word they use for meditation. They call it pavana. But it's also it means cultivating or developing the path. So what the path is this awareness, isn't it? This, when you bring it down to the reality of the path at this moment. It's nothing more than trusting in this awareness. Cultivating it, because it does, we have to keep reminding ourselves, so easy to forget. The world will creep up and say, you should be doing this, and you shouldn't, and this thing is very, very important. This is a crisis. We're having a crisis right now, and the world's falling apart, and the sky is falling in, and people start coming at me with this kind of panic and inner screaming, and I don't know, mate, you've got to do something about. Used to be one monk that used to do that to me all the time. I just made it. And I find myself, what are we going to do? So then, out of bhavana with that, being aware, of trusting, because the world does that, doesn't it? It's kind of, there's always crises and urgent problems and things that need to be addressed right now. And this is really important, and you can't just ignore this by going into sati sampajanya. You've got to be deluded like the rest of us to deal with this problem. Easily get intimidated. So, but same with pavana or cultivating, then it more and more you feel at ease. This is your natural state. This is your real home. This is where you really belong. As you begin to open and trust and relax into it, it's not created. You're not. It's not some illusory or kind of vague thing that you create and kind of it has wispy, airy-fairy quality to it. It's profound and real as you begin to know and trust in this knowing.